Welcome back to the third hour of Issues Etc. Open lines for the next hour. Open lines is always anything you want to talk about. I've already laid a question on the table. If you were listening before the break, you heard the PBS Religion and Ethics News Weekly special. They were talking about these companies, Clear Play, Clean Flicks, and what's the last one? It's Clear Play TV. There it is. These are companies that are producing software and various filters so that if you rent a movie, if you watch, even if you're watching, say, a movie on pay-per-view, something like, well, they had Matrix Revolutions. Yeah, there's a lot of kicking and slapping in that movie and a little bit of gunplay, too, and maybe you don't want your kids to see that. So they offer a way for you to simply take it out. Software that will take out the violence. You set the parameters. You tell them what you want to see, what you don't want to see, whether it be the vulgarity or the violence, profanity, or the sexuality, and the filter does the rest. Now, with some movies, it might turn out to be incomprehensible gobbledygook by the time you're done because there's so much in there. I mean, what does Good Will Hunting sound like after you've taken out 125 instances of the F word? Probably sounds somewhat incomprehensible. But you can do it if you want to. Would you do it? Is this an option for you? Why or why not? I want your answer to that question. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Now, the argument against it is, and this is being made by those who produce the television and the movies we watch, look, if people didn't want it in there, they wouldn't be renting or buying or watching our stuff. And it sells. But of course, there is a small market. There are people who would like to see everything taken out. Are you one of them? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Okay, let's just assume from the outset that what Hollywood and the media produce, they're going to continue to produce. Is this a solution? Software that would simply take out all the stuff you find objectionable. 505-7850. 1-800-730-2727. We start with Joel, who calls from his car. Hi, Joel.
How you doing? Well, let me pick up on the, let me go ahead and take your question.
Sure.
And adjust on it a little bit. Well, are Christians actually really jonesing so bad to watch these movies that they need to go ahead and take the movie and then clarify it so that I can watch it? So that I can also be a part of the rest of the world.
That's an interesting take.
Or are we going to want to actually separate ourselves from the rest of the world and just be able to say and have the restraint to be able to say, well, I don't need to watch that movie. End of story.
All right. Thank you very much, Joel. I appreciate it. That's a take I hadn't considered there. Does this represent, because there is a market for this, for these filters that will temper the violence and hide the sex and mute the swear words, since there is a market for it, does it say more about the Christian community who's saying, look, we really, really want to watch these movies, but of course we have our moral qualms because of some of the content. Please give us something that will take out all the things that we find objectionable. You know, sometimes, we've talked about this with Brian Godawa before, sometimes the most objectionable thing about a movie, in my mind, is not the individual swear words or scenes. It's the worldview that's being portrayed. You know, someone stopped me the other day, they said, they recommended that I watch Million Dollar Baby, the story with Clint Eastwood and what's-her-face, the woman boxer. I hope I'm not spoiling it for anybody. The woman boxer, this relationship between her trainer and the young woman, she's got great promise. She suffers some sort of debilitating accident, and it ends with an assisted suicide. Now, I don't know how often they cuss. I don't know if she ever takes off her top. I don't know if Clint Eastwood tramps around naked in this thing, because I don't want to watch the movie. Not because I don't like Clint Eastwood. It's because I don't want to end the movie with a knot in my stomach because I've watched assisted suicide favorably portrayed. So is this a solution for you? It's open lines, issues, etc. The final day of August. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. If someone were offering to you a filter that you could simply put on your DVD player that will temper the violence and hide the sex and mute, literally mute the profanity to your level of preference. If you don't mind, let's see, if you have a real problem with the F word, it'll take that out. But if you want it all gone, it'll take it all out. If you don't like SOB, it'll take that out. You can set the parameters. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Now, I'm watching this PBS Religion and Ethics News Weekly story, and they come to the part where they're talking about Clear TV or Clear Play TV, and they're showing an episode of Friends. It's become the new Seinfeld. It is the show that is so much in syndication, you can turn almost any hour of the day and see an episode of Friends running. So there it is. You get this filter for your television, and it'll take out the objectionable stuff. But they're showing this scene from Friends, and about every 4 seconds, it is muting the audio. You still see the people's lips moving and them dancing about the stage, but it mutes the audio. And I'm wondering to myself, does taking out the profanity from, or the vulgarities, whatever they were taking out there in that Friends episode, does it make it more watchable, or does it actually draw attention? Is it that you don't want to hear it? I guess that's my question here. Does having the sound muted so that you don't hear it make it less objectionable to you? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. You know, they can do this. They actually described it there in that PBS special where in, say, a movie involving, there's this movie Troy, Brad Pitt emerges with, you know, bedecked in his Greek armor. He's ready to kill somebody. You get to see, if you set the parameters on your ClearPlay DVD player well enough, you get to see Brad Pitt pull out his sword, raise it up over his head, swing it. Then, through the magic of this technology, you see his enemy lying dead on the ground. It takes out, what, half a second of some gore. The guy's dead at the end. Brad Pitt's still done the dirty deed, but you didn't have to watch. I wonder, what would this do with a movie like The Passion of the Christ? I think it would probably be like this. And then the movie would be over. Certainly lose the whole point of the movie. Gail calls from St. Charles, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Hi, Gail.
Hi, how are you?
Very well.
I remember when Crestwood Plaza, or the drive-in at Crestwood, used to have family nights, and they were showing the movies without the language, without the sex. And I remember one time we took our family to see Top Gun, and I loved that movie. And then when I saw the real Top Gun, I hated it. I thought the story was great, but the language and the sex was horrible. And I've been watching Amazing Race lately on Game Show Channel, and I'm putting it on mute and just watching the closed captioning because they will kind of take out some of the stuff there. And I love the show, but I hate to watch it in person. So for me, anything that could filter out, I simply just don't like to hear the words. That's it.
So for you, this is the words that you hear are such an obstacle to enjoying what would otherwise be some decent entertainment. It's just an obstacle for you.
It's an obstacle to me, and I really don't even think it's a Christian issue. I think it's just a decency issue, and I'm really sorry that men don't stick up for women anymore when in a mixed company you just hear the most horrible things, and men don't even say anything. They expect us to be like one of them and one of their buddies, and it really bothers me. So in the movies, it really is an obstacle. There are a lot of movies that I've just finally walked out on and said, I'm sure it was great, but I'll wait until it comes out on the TV version. I think it'll be better.
Gail, yeah. Thank you so much. We were watching a movie. What about the rest of you, by the way? I mean, here's someone honestly calling in and saying, look, the profanity just gets in the way of me enjoying what would otherwise be entertaining. And so this might be an option to have a filter that through the magic of technology simply takes it out. And you're right, if you're watching closed captioning, I'm not sure about this in every case, but if you're watching closed captioning, it sometimes just puts, you know, expletive deleted or something like that. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Now, maybe this is evidence of the coarsening of American culture, but I was watching a movie the other night with my wife. We had to send the daughter out of the room at a certain point in this movie. And while we're picky parents with regard to this stuff, we're probably not as picky as many would be when it comes to the profanity and whatnot in popular film. But this was, this one just absolutely crossed the line in every way. And we both ended watching this movie, I won't tell you which one it was, saying, you know, that was just a very interesting story, a really compelling story. It had a great twist at the end. But the, and I can only describe it as the crudity. It wasn't, you know, frontal nudity and things like that. It was just the dialogue was so unbelievably crude at certain points. It was gratuitous. And even me, this jaded baby boomer who grew up with this stuff and knows what locker room language sounds like, I mean, it even had my ears tingling. And it was a case where I could have said, you know, the movie could have been so much better without it. It didn't need it. That's what I mean by gratuitous. It was completely, it required no context. Now, Gail raises another issue that you might want to address, and that is, it's not just television and the movies and our music. It's everyday conversation. It used to be, the term used to be mixed company. There were certain things you didn't say or discuss in mixed company. Nowadays, apparently that distinction is gone. And Gail's a little disturbed by the fact that men won't stand up for women when people simply won't recognize that we are in mixed company. Calling from Washington, D.C., listening on the Internet, Barry, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Pastor Todd, I got to ask you a question, and forgive me for asking. Why in the world would you be watching a movie like that with your wife?
What do you mean?
If it's so bad that you got to send your daughter out of the room, is it really something that you should be filtering through your ears? I won't watch those.
Why not?
If I can't listen to them with my kids, then I've got something better to do with my time. Like go down, sit in front of the Internet, and listen to KFUO. I would much rather hear this kind, your words than hear coarse, vulgar talk constantly, because I find when I watch one of those movies, it seeps down into my very being and affects the words that go through my mind, affects the thoughts that go through my mind. I don't want that kind of stuff there.
What's
I don't know, maybe it's weakness on my part.
No. I don't think it's weakness. I'm not at all, Barry. What's the threshold for you?
A couple of years ago, I was watching the Super Bowl. I'm not a big football fan, but my kids, you know, wanted to watch the Super Bowl. Some guy comes out on the Baltimore team and says the F word in my living room. And I said, that's it. Turn it off. I don't want to hear it. I don't want that in my living room, and I'm not going to pay, what is it, $8-$9 to go see it in a movie theater.
So you don't, I'm not being facetious here, Barry. You don't see a lot of movies.
I would rather see a violent movie than one filled with coarse language. I'd sooner see a naked woman run across the screen than listen to the vile talk. I don't know. I mean, I'm not saying that every movie I watch has to be rated G. But when something just hits that threshold of being coarse and vulgar and vile, I don't want it.
All right. Thank you very much, Barry. And I appreciate your concern here. You asked the question why I was watching it with my wife, and we sent the kid out of the room. And it wasn't long into this movie that we sent the kid out of the room. Well, I would answer that in two ways. First of all, my wife and I are adults. And I think adults do have the discernment to be able to disregard these things. Now, can a constant diet of this coarsen one's own way of thinking and one's own way of speaking? Yes, of course. If consumed in that way without any discernment or discretion, of course it can. Absolutely. But Barry himself very honestly admits that it is the coarse language that he finds so objectionable. It's not so much the violence or the other things. I mean, everyone has their threshold. So what is yours? There are those who are saying, look, set your own threshold. Here is a piece of technology that would allow you to set your own threshold, and you can still watch, well, Craig here is joking with me off the air, you could still watch, say, The Sopranos. Now, Every episode would be very short. But you could, without any guilty pleasure, you could watch The Sopranos. You get to see Tony walk down the driveway. They might cut that because his robe often flies open and he's wearing his underwear and his T-shirt. But you get to see Tony walk down the driveway, pick up his newspaper, turn around. It cuts to a scene of the car driving down the street. Then, perhaps Tony standing outside the club the minute he walks in, it cuts to another scene. And then he's talking to one of his friends. Most of the conversation would be gone. And then the closing theme. You might not even hear the theme music, by the way. If you've ever listened to the theme music of The Sopranos, it describes all sorts of violence, and it describes the life of a mafioso. So what's your threshold? 505-7850-1-800-730-2727. By the way, that's a question that everyone must answer. Unless, of course, you're simply going to toss the television out. The Internet, too, radio, and everything else. 505-7850-1-800-730-2727. There's a new Pew Research poll on religion and politics that I found very interesting. Let's hear from John Green. He's a senior fellow in religion and American politics at the Pew Forum on Religion and Public Life. He says fewer Americans view the Democrats as friendly to religion.
Most people tend to see the Republican Party as being friendly towards religion. But interestingly enough, many fewer people see the Democratic Party as being friendly to religion, which is a fairly dramatic change from last summer when we last asked this question.
Oh, this is tantalizing. What was it last summer? We'll find out here in just a minute. But first of all, do you agree or disagree with the results of this Pew Forum poll, that more and more people, in increasing numbers, are seeing the Democrats as hostile to religion? 505-7850-1-800-730-2727. Some of you may have read about this and said, duh. I mean, since how is this news that the Democrats are hostile to religion? But public opinion seems to be shifting on this, more and more in the direction of those who would say, yeah, the Democrats are hostile to religion. Do you agree? 505-7850-1-800-730-2727. Green says that the percentage of Americans who view the Democrats as religion-friendly has suddenly declined sharply.
Last summer, about 40% of Americans said that they thought the Democratic Party was friendly towards religion. And in our most recent survey, it had fallen to 29%. Which is a pretty steep drop in a year's time.
It sure is. So how do you explain it? What has happened in the last year that you could point to say that would account for this shift in public opinion? Now, it's trending in the same direction, but the number of people who think that the Democratic Party is religion-friendly is dropping off fast. If it keeps at this trend, it'll be down to single digits soon. 505-7850-1-800-730-2727. Is this simply the result of some brilliant positioning in politics? That with this kind of grassroots issue, one party has been able to successfully portray the other as hostile to religion, while simultaneously portraying itself as friendly to religion. John Green of the Pew Forum on Religion and Public Life says some don't like the GOP's affinity to religion.
A significant number of people were concerned that religious conservatives had too much influence in the Republican Party, but about almost an equal number felt that non-religious people had too much influence in the Democratic Party.
So it seems like both parties are coming in for it in this Pew Forum poll. Do you agree with both the findings? One, that public opinion seems to indicate the Democrats are hostile to religion, and people are also concerned in equal numbers that the Republican Party is, well, has been taken over by religious concerns. 505-7850-1-800-730-2727. Now, you think about it, there might be some GOP kingpins who are rubbing their hands happily at this moment saying, we've achieved what we want to achieve. You know, it was Dr. David Adams in a conversation I had with him recently that said, you know why Washington, D.C. types do polls? They don't do polls to find out what you think. They already know what you think. They do polls to find out how to change what you think. What words, what phrases, what questions can sway public opinion? That's why polls are done from Washington, D.C. Well, here's this one that says, the American people, by big percentages, believe that the Democrats are hostile to religion and that the Republicans have been taken over by religious concerns. Finally, this Pew poll shows that most Americans want creationism as well as evolution taught in our public schools. This is John Green, again, of the Pew Forum.
We asked people what should be taught in science classrooms. And much to our surprise, a very large proportion of the population, about two-thirds, said, gee, let's teach both. Let's teach something of the creationist perspective, but also something from the evolution perspective.
Okay, we've got about a half hour here in Issues Etc. Open lines today, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. I want to hear from you on both of these questions. First of all, do you agree with the Pew poll that one party tends to be hostile to religion while the other is perhaps a bit too friendly to religion? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. The other question that is raised here has to do with creation and evolution. People want to see both. This was really shocking, but it's true. People want to see both creationism of some form and evolutionism taught in the public schools. They got no problem with that. They'd be happy with it. There's another poll here I might get to if time permits and your phone calls permit that has raised the question in my mind about the whole issue of creation. Do you want creationism taught alongside evolution in public schools? That's what most people want. Rather than one or the other, they want both. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Let's talk to Herman, who calls from Illinois. Hi, Herman.
Well, thank you for taking my call. You were talking about the issue on the movies, re-editing them and so forth. You know, and I recall one of the movies I enjoy watching again is like Casablanca or Orson Welles' The Third Man. And what it strikes me as they deal with themes of conflict and romance and so forth, but they do it in a way that they engage the viewer, listener, and they develop that engagement and lead it to a resolve. And that's a lot different than relying upon passing titillation, sensational special effects, vulgarity, violence, etc. It seems like a lot of Hollywood, for the most part, has forgot how to make a movie. And some names, if you see who have produced it, like Martin Scorsese, it's automatically forget it. I don't want to see it. There's something about that older restraint that in at least put the craft of acting, script writing, and other trades of movie making into a more able, engaging kind of expression that you can follow, get involved with, but you're not scandalized and abused as you watch it.
Herman, thank you so much. When we come back from this break, more of your phone calls, open lines, 25 minutes. I'll respond to Herman's call right after this.
Equipping the priesthood of all believers. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Civil religion is the use of religious ideas and terminology and even ritual in the service of the state. Is American civil religion necessary for our society? Why do so few Christians seem to be able to distinguish between the God of Christianity and the God of American civil religion? Our Issues Etc. book of the month for August is called The Anonymous God, The Church Confronts Civil Religion and American Society. You can find this book at two CPH bookstore locations in St. Louis, one at 3558 South Jefferson in the city, the other on the campus of Concordia Seminary in Clayton. Follow the signs to the CPH bookstore and ask for the Issues Etc. book of the month for August, The Anonymous God. Those two locations, 3558 South Jefferson in the city, or on the campus of Concordia Seminary in Clayton. When you stop by, mention Issues Etc.
Thou shalt be nice, a new commandment?
Answers with Ken Ham, author of a new booklet on Noah's Ark and Noah's Flood.
The Ten Commandments, Ken, have been much in the American news recently, and are you going to make things more controversial by adding another commandment?
Mark, no. But I did want to talk about what researchers discovered after interviewing 3,000 teenagers who attended church in the United States. A study summarized the beliefs of these teens in a new book called Soul Searching: The Religious and Spiritual Lives of American Teenagers. Now, researchers found that overall, most teens believe that a God exists who created and ordered the world and who also watches over human life. But they believe the central goal of life is to be happy, to feel good about themselves, to be nice. They had little or no understanding of things like sin, judgment, salvation, and Christ. The researchers concluded that these young people, though active in their churches, either don't understand what their churches expect them to believe, or they just don't care. In fact, I'd go on to say that most church leaders have allowed recent generations, and especially our young people today, to reject Genesis. What's resulted is that a sad compromise has occurred. They accept millions of years and evolution. Now, as a result of this, generations in the church are looking at the Bible as just a spiritual book instead of a book of history that should be the foundation of all of our thinking.
Was Noah's flood a real event in history? Ken Ham provides the answer in a free booklet available on our website, answersradio.com.
This is Dr. John Tape with the Media Minute. According to the parable of the Good Samaritan, a traveler on the road to Jericho fell among thieves who beat him up and left him for dead. Later, a Samaritan came along and cared for the injured victim. In this parable, Jesus tells us to be sensitive to the suffering of others. According to the American Psychiatric Association, watching violence in the media leads children to be less sensitive to the real needs of real-life people. When children frequently watch actors getting shot or beat up, it's easy to start thinking that pain and suffering are no big deal. If you want your children to be more sensitive to the needs of others, reduce their exposure to media violence. And remind your children that Jesus is always sensitive to their needs. That's why he died on the cross for them. This Media Minute is brought to you by the Christian Media Literacy Institute. Please visit our website at cmli.org.
Science seems to be moving at breakneck speed. How can Christians make ethical decisions on issues like stem cell research, abortion, and euthanasia? Hi, this is Todd Wilkin, inviting you to join us for the Image of God Bioethics Conference, Friday, November the 11th at the Sheraton Westport Lakeside Chalet in St. Louis. For more information, go to our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. regular guest Wesley Smith is one of the featured speakers. The Image of God Bioethics Conference, November the 11th in St. Louis.
We asked people what should be taught in science classrooms, and much to our surprise, a very large proportion of the population, about two-thirds, said, gee, let's teach both. Let's teach something of the creationist perspective, but also something from the evolution perspective.
That's John Green of the Pew Forum on Religion and Public Life talking about a new poll that was done by that organization, that question having to do with what people believe should be taught in public schools, creation or evolution. No, they say creation and evolution. It's Open Lines, Issues, Etc. Our call-in numbers are 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. That seems to be the majority opinion. Is it yours? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Tomorrow on Issues, Etc., Christians and dating. From someone who apparently knows something about dating, how many kids does Pastor Stuckwish have? Well, he knows something about marriage, that's for sure. Eight? And counting. Pastor Richard Stuckwish, a regular guest here on the program. We'll talk about that tomorrow on the program. Also, Eastern Orthodoxy and Religious Freedom with international human rights attorney Dr. John Warwick Montgomery. You might have seen the story in World Magazine. The Russian Orthodox apparently are involved in a media campaign organized through the state there in a former Soviet republic to accuse evangelical Christians of every stripe of things like Satanism and all sorts of other crudities. And the Russian Orthodox Church is involved in this. We'll find out what it's all about with Dr. John Warwick Montgomery tomorrow on the program. One thing that I think almost uniformly the audience of Issues, Etc. is concerned about are the life issues. Whether it be embryonic stem cell research or euthanasia or abortion or human cloning, all of these issues come together. And it is the one thing, in spite of the many differences in our audience, that probably brings most of us together. Coming up November the 11th, it's a Friday here in St. Louis, they will be holding the Image of God Bioethics Conference. Now, it's a ways off, but it's getting closer day by day. For more information about the Image of God Bioethics Conference here in St. Louis, go to our website, issuesetc.org, issuesetc.org, and find their logo and a link on our homepage. It's the Image of God Bioethics Conference. That link also has information about a brochure, gives you everything you need to know, cost and location. It's all there at our homepage, issuesetc.org. It's open lines. Let's talk with Jason, listening on the Internet in Raleigh, North Carolina. Hi, Jason.
Hi, Pastor Todd. I think the editing of movies is okay, but it really takes away from the movie itself. TBS a lot of times will play the movie... I can't think of what's called now. Well, it'll play different movies that are big Hollywood movies, but they take out so much, the movie is really left wanting, and you lose a lot. And I think there's just not a lot of call for movies that are decent. You know, I love horror movies, like there's movies like The Ring and The Village, which really didn't need to have a lot of gore, a lot of language, but they were really captivating.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. In fact, you mentioned those two, and... with a few exceptions, they were not the bloodiest things in the world. They were not the most violent things in the world. They were certainly disturbing, as horror movies are designed to be. Didn't have a lot of profanity. In fact, I think The Village, which I finally got around to watching, because it got such terrible reviews because everyone said it was supposed to be scary and it wasn't scary. I watched the movie and I realized this wasn't a horror movie at all. It was a love story. It was a love story, and people just didn't understand. It wasn't supposed to be that scary, although it was pretty scary at points. I don't think it had any profanity in it at all, if I'm not mistaken. Not one bit. So, Jason says, the content does suffer if these things are edited out. That's certainly true for a lot of movies. In fact, some movies would just be unwatchable, incoherent, if everything was taken out. So is that the solution? The first caller says, and it's been echoed by other callers, the first caller says, what does it say about Christians that they want to watch these things? And they feel that they can somehow rid themselves of the guilty pleasure of watching them if they just take out all the parts that they might find morally objectionable. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. It's open lines, issues, etc.
Last summer, about 40% of Americans said that they thought the Democratic Party was friendly towards religion, and in our most recent survey, it had fallen to 29%, which is a pretty steep drop in a year's time.
That is a steep drop. What has happened in the last year to apparently push public opinion toward this position that the Democratic Party is hostile to religion? Can you think of anything? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Before we leave behind this issue, I want to mention something. Harris Interactive had a poll in July this year where they took up the whole issue of creation and evolution and intelligent design. Now, this has been cited in the media various places. You might have heard that according to the latest Harris poll, 64% of adults in the U.S. agree with the basic tenet of creationism, that human beings were created directly by God. Now, this both squares and fails to square with some of the other findings in this poll. I've had a bit of an epiphany on this lately. Maybe it's just one of the last final naivetes that I entertained. I was raised being taught by everyone around me that Genesis chapters 1 through 3 were literal history. That God did create the world in 6 days. And as I was young, I probably believed that every Christian, if they were Christian, believed that. Now, that was certainly naive. But that naivete stayed with me for a long time, up until very recently. Then, in the course of doing this show, I realized that some of the guests that I talk to, who otherwise I have every reason to respect, don't believe in a literal 6-day creation. They don't. I won't tell you who they are, but you probably know for yourself. And that there's a whole movement out there, of course, to try and find some sort of a halfway house between creation and evolution. And then in conversing with fellow pastors and people in the church who do not consider it important to believe in a literal six-day creation, suddenly this naivete is shattered. And I began to wonder, and I still do wonder, if it's just me. I still believe in a literal six-day creation. I find nothing in reason nor in science to sway me from this, and certainly nothing in God's Word that would permit me to deviate from that view. But I'm getting the feeling, and maybe it's just me, tell me if I'm wrong, that that view is, even in spite of what Harris Interactive reports, becoming a minority. That fewer and fewer Christians deem it necessary to believe in a literal six-day creation. You know, my own church body, it is still our official position that God created the world in six regular old days. That is our official position, and yet even in our last convention, a resolution to say, yes, let's teach creation and not evolution, and to reject evolution in our own schools, our own church schools, all the way up to the college level, that resolution could only garner 80%. Anyway, 80%, that's good. That's better than the national average. But this is a church you're talking about whose official position is a six-day creation. And fully 20% of the delegates to that convention were completely comfortable with evolution being taught to their children and their young people and future church workers in this church body. I'm starting to wonder about this, not about the position itself, but whether or not we're losing the battle on a six-day creation. Just some thoughts there. Now, Mitt Romney is the governor of Massachusetts. He's been much in the news, of course, because Massachusetts was the first state in the union to actually legalize gay marriage. But Governor Romney has all along been opposed to gay marriage. He appeared recently on Chris Matthews' Hardball. He's also being eyed as a possible presidential candidate in 2008. You might not have known that. Well, Chris Matthews had him on Hardball, and their conversation began with questions regarding gay marriage and same-sex unions.
A year and a half ago, the Massachusetts Supreme Court legalized gay marriage in the state, igniting a national debate on the definition of marriage in America. Today, legislators in Massachusetts voted to hold a constitutional convention next month to consider civil unions. But is it just about changing the name? Republican Mitt Romney's the governor of Massachusetts. Welcome, Governor. Do you think there's any difference, really, between a gay marriage and something called a civil union?
Well, I'd rather have neither, to tell you the truth. I'd rather have domestic partnership benefits, such as hospital visitation rights for same-sex couples. I don't want civil unions or gay marriage. But there is a difference, even when just the word is the difference. And the difference is that if you indicate as a society that you're indifferent between a same-sex couple marrying and a heterosexual couple marrying, then it means our schools and other institutions are going to have to indicate that there's no difference whatsoever. And that obviously has societal consequences that are important.
You mean if we called it marriage two or barrage or came up with some other word, and yet the law was exactly the same, that would be significant?
Well, I'm not sure we're going to come up with a different word, but if you say that the society is entirely indifferent between whether you have heterosexuals or homosexual couples marrying, then how do you justify, for instance, having birth certificates that include the names of mothers and fathers? We have same-sex couples in my state now saying we had to remove mother and father from a birth certificate, instead say parent A and parent B. We have schools that believe that it's inappropriate to consider mother and father in textbooks. Some have said that that's too heterocentrist. Mm-hmm. And so, I think it's appropriate for us to indicate that we do care as a society and that marriage is a relationship preserved for a man and a woman.
Help me understand Massachusetts politics here. Is it a battle between a very hyped up, passionate interest group, gay people and their supporters, against a sort of a vague opposition to it? Or is it, tell me, what is it? What is the politics of this issue? Why doesn't the state of Massachusetts, through its elected officials, simply overrule the Supreme Court up there and say, there's not going to be any gay marriage? I don't care what some judge says about the Constitution written 200 years ago. Why don't they just do that?
Well, Well, as you know, it's not that easy. When a court overreaches its bounds and decides to legislate from the bench, it's pretty hard to overturn that. In our case, we have to pass a constitutional amendment. And my legislature is in some respects liberal. It has a conservative wing as well, but the liberal wing is fighting very hard for same-sex marriage or its legal equivalent, civil union. And so as this has gone before the legislature in the past, they've said that the people ought to decide. I agree with them. Let's let the people decide. So we'll have a constitutional convention this year. Hopefully the decision of our legislature will be to let the people decide. And specifically, I hope the people will be able to decide that neither civil union nor same-sex marriage is legal in Massachusetts.
If they end up agreeing on a civil union solution, would you continue to fight for change to go back to the original man and a woman proposition?
Well, yeah, I'm going to want to see a marriage limited to a man and a woman. I don't want to see civil union either. Of course, if we find ourselves in a setting where the only choice is between civil union and marriage, I'll prefer civil union, but I prefer neither.
Okay, let me ask you about this. I was going to ask it in the next segment. I want to jump ahead to it right now. My second cut at this is nationally. You're going to run for president, right?
No, I haven't made any decision like that. It's way too early to think of something like that. I love being governor, love what I'm doing here.
Why do I get the impression you're running for governor? I mean, running for president. I get the impression you're a candidate for president. I watch this every day. I read the news. I see you're evolving on a number of these issues. You're becoming, it seems to be, pretty appropriate for the Republican Party on issues like gay marriage. And you look like you're running for president. You're not content with just being governor of Massachusetts, are you?
I love being governor of Massachusetts. I'm intent on the job. Anything beyond that is something so remote, both in time and probability, it's not worth talking about at this point, Chris.
Mark Souter, a conservative from the Middle West, said that if you don't run for re-election as governor of Massachusetts, the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, you will be looking like you're running away from a fight you can't win. Do you buy that assumption?
Oh, I win by a landslide. Well, I win by a landslide in Massachusetts if I run for re-election. And that's very possibly what I'm going to do. But fundamentally, what I'm doing here is trying to get an agenda through that includes a health care plan that gets everybody health insurance, that it reforms our school system, and that builds more jobs here. That's what I'm fighting for. And anything beyond that, time will only tell.
Do you think that the Republican nomination for 2008 is open now? There's no clear front runner.
Well, I think John McCain is a front runner, perhaps Rudy Giuliani, Senator Frist. There are a number of folks that are very strong. We have a very strong field, and I want to make sure that we see some strong names continue to be out there fighting very hard, because I think Hillary Clinton will be the Democratic nominee. And given the challenges our nation faces, I can't imagine anything worse than having her as president.
All right, that's the end of the Hardball interview with Chris Matthews. Mitt Romney, the governor of Massachusetts, speaking there on the issue of gay marriage. He even rejects the whole issue of same-sex unions. He says that's not a viable option either. Is this a guy who you would vote for? Matthews tried to get him to show his cards on 2008 in a possible presidential run, but he was holding them pretty close to the vest. Well, if he did run, think about the possibilities here. You got John McCain, you got Rudolph Giuliani, and by the way, Kevin Horrigan, this was just last week, wrote this piece, Urban Governance, the Giuliani Conundrum, and he's talking about the problem that Rudolph Giuliani presents as a candidate in 2008 to Republicans, because by his own admission, and this is a quote, I'm pro-choice, I'm pro-gay rights, that's Rudolph Giuliani. But think about it. Frist, he's just kind of perhaps hurt himself on the issue of embryonic stem cell research, but Mitt Romney's running. Are you voting for him? Give me a call, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Something you may not know about Governor Romney, but it does kind of help you see where he stands and why he stands where he stands on many of these issues. He's a Mormon. Would this be an issue with you? Would you vote for a Mormon presidential candidate? He's against gay marriage. That's something we're going to have to deal with federally pretty soon or later. And he seems to be right on so many other issues. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Now, I get that Giuliani quote from Kevin Horrigan's column in the Sunday paper from a couple Sundays back. He writes, with a mere 3 years remaining until 2008, presidential nominating conventions, the Gallup organization's latest poll shows New York Mayor Rudolph Giuliani leading the Republican field, repeating that, for those who may have missed it, that's Rudy, an actual quote in 1999, "I'm pro-choice, I'm pro-gay rights," Giuliani leading the Republican field. He writes, "Somewhere Fred Sanford is clutching his chest and moaning, 'This is the big one, Elizabeth. I'm coming to join you, honey.'" Now, of course, Rudolph Giuliani was popular before, but rocketed to nationwide popularity and almost unconditional positive regard after September 11th. Well, he just did a marvelous job. He was also asked to stay on acting as mayor far beyond the end of his term, in spite of the fact that he'd, up until September 11th, really been, he'd done great things for New York, but his personal life was falling apart. Do you remember? Dalliances, living with mistresses, everything. And yet, in polls as late as a couple weeks ago, he is a frontrunner for the Republican nomination in 2008. So, would you vote for Rudy Giuliani in a Republican primary? It's going to come down to that, you know. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. What about Mitt Romney? He has held steadfast on this issue of gay marriage. He has tried his hardest, all within the power of his skills as governor in Massachusetts, to see to it that there wasn't legalized gay marriage in Massachusetts. He was pretty much overcome in that. He doesn't even want a place. He's even more conservative than President George W. Bush on the issue of same-sex unions. Bush has been pretty clear. No gay marriage, no problem with same-sex unions. Mitt Romney says no, a problem with both of them. It's Open Lines, Issues, Etc., 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Would you vote for Giuliani in the Republican primary? What if Giuliani got the nomination? Emma's running against Senator Hillary Clinton, as many people are predicting is most likely to happen. I mean, think about it. We're looking at a limited number of people. No one's going to jump up out of the woodwork and say, "Hi, I'm going to be your next president." The people we're looking at are probably the people you'll be voting for. So Romney, Giuliani. I want to hear from our political junkies in the Issues Etc. audience. You've certainly been thinking about this. Did you see the cover of this of the paper where Rudolph Giuliani is pictured and the poll numbers are touted? He's the front runner. And did you say to yourself, "Well, I guess I'm voting for Rudy"? Or did you, and this is me, I looked at it and I thought, man, I hope something happens in the next 3 years. Because as much as I admire this man for his work after September 11th, there are not enough clothespins for my nose when I go into the polls to vote for Rudolph Giuliani. Because the issues are wrong. If only the life issue, if only the life issue, he has been consistent in his position against life. And of late, been consistent in his position in favor of gay marriage. So there's not a big enough clothespin in the world to cover that, as far as I'm concerned. What about you? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Issues Etc. is underwritten by Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana. They not only provide us with this underwriting, great support, but also think about the guests they provide to us. The likes of Dr. Arthur Just and Larry Rast. Pretty soon here we'll be having Dr. Dean Wenthe on. Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, a proud underwriter of Issues Etc. and provider of tremendous guests on the program. If you're interested in visiting them, they're on campus in Fort Wayne. Their number, 1-800-481-2155, 1-800-481-2155. It's Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana. You can also find them by going to our website, issuesetc.org. Their logo is there on our homepage. Sandy calls from Alton. Sandy, welcome to Issues Etc.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'd like to give an opinion on your political issues here. Do you happen to know if Romney has a pro-life stance?
That's an interesting question. This is the best I can discover. about, and stay on the line there if you would, Sandy, because I imagine there's a question to be asked. This is the best that I can discover, and this comes from the Boston Globe as of about a month and a half ago. So this is recent. Early June, Romney has been accused by a top political strategist of basically faking his support of abortion rights in Massachusetts. He seems to be moving from being personally opposed but legally in favor of abortion to, he seems to be moving to a more pro-life position. Now, I read in part from the Boston Globe's story, advisor says governor faked stance on abortion. Romney ran for U.S. Senate in 1994, pledging to keep abortion safe and legal in this country. That's a pro-choice stance, no doubt about it. But I read on just a second. As of 2002, candidate for governor Romney said he would not change the state's abortion laws, but in recent months he has described himself as personally pro-life to out-of-town political audiences. And last month he told USA Today that he is in a different place on abortion than when he ran in 1994 against Edward Kennedy. And a Romney spokesman is saying that his position on abortion has evolved over time, but of course would not elaborate. What does it tell you, Sandy?
Could be genuine, could be political pragmatism to, you know, pull conservative voters. However, his view on standing firm with the homosexual marriage issue, I would agree with that. Him being a Mormon really wouldn't bother me at all. I kind of see a likeness to back in 1960 when people were clamoring to hammer John F. Kennedy. My parents weren't a Kennedy supporter, but they really didn't see a problem. I remember the detractors of him as a candidate were saying the Pope would be deciding government policy, and which was not the case.
Real quickly here, Sandy, yes or no, would you vote for Giuliani?
No way.
All right, Sandy, thank you very much. So Romney's possibility for Sandy, and look, it would be odd to vote for a Mormon president. And who knows whether his pro-life position will come all the way to pro-life or whether or not he's just kind of testing the waters for a possible run in 2008. You know, we might be facing that very real possibility, electing a pro-life, anti-gay marriage Mormon, or at least trying to run him in 2008. Tomorrow on the program, we'll discuss Eastern Orthodoxy and religious freedom. There seems to be a problem with the Russian Orthodox Church. Dr. John Warwick Montgomery will join us. We'll also discuss Christians and dating with Dr. Richard Stuckwish. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can donate by credit card on our resource line, 1-800-737-0172, 1-800-737-0172. For a free audio copy of this hour of Issues Etc., please visit the audio archive section at KFUO.org. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of AM850 KFUO. Issues Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.